is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Today, a conversation with Congressman Peter DeFazio. Last week, he announced that he'll retire at the end of the current term. Congressman, back in Washington, D.C., thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks, Kyle. 36 years, a good run, and, you know, I thought it was time.
So what led to this decision? Is this one of those things with the pandemic that maybe caused you to kind of evaluate things a little differently?
Well, a lot went into it. I mean, doing this job in a time of pandemic was harder. When I marked up the big infrastructure bill called Invest the first time 2 years ago, it was the first virtual committee markup in the history of the United States Congress. And the Republicans were all there, and there were no other Democrats, or not all the Republicans, but a bunch of them. And it went on for 20 straight hours. I had one person relieve me for 2 hours. I got it done. But, I mean, the job became harder. But I still managed to move. I moved that bill twice out of the House. Ultimately, we got what I've been chasing since Obama, which is a massive increase in our deteriorated infrastructure, rebuilding America in partnership with cities, counties, and states. Not all the policies I wanted, but I got that done, and that's something I've been chasing for a long time. And I don't have another big objective before me in front of my committee. So, I figured it was a good time.
Now, infrastructure has always been a big focus for you, at least in recent years. What led to that philosophy about the importance of infrastructure and making some big changes?
Well, I was a county commissioner. You know, Lane County is the size of the state of Connecticut. I became very familiar with how important moving people and goods, accessing the forests, was to everyday life, and got really invested in the idea of, basics, for moving people and goods, the economy and quality of life. And when I got elected to Congress, I competed for and got on what was then called the Public Works Committee. And I've been there ever since, 36 years, got a lot done, and half those years were in the minority. And in the old days, I could still get big things done in the minority. In 2006, when I was the senior Democrat, so-called ranking member on the Surface Transportation Subcommittee, I got a $450 million allocation to Oregon directly to deal with our I-5 bridge problem. And I got a change in the federal formula, which persists to this day, which ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation, tells me has brought in an additional $1.3 billion into the state over the 15 years since that, and it will continue after I'm gone. But these are things that make a difference in people's everyday lives: dredging our harbors, maintaining our jetties, wastewater, drinking water, roads, bridges, highways, everything. And that's been my major focus.
And I know during the Trump administration, you had an ally in the administration that you talked about in terms of infrastructure. Felt like you'd see more there happen than did, it sounds like.
Well, we actually, after we took the House back in 18, I was one of about eight people invited down to the White House to meet with the president. And we had quite a long discussion about what's infrastructure, and we agreed on it. We had consensus, including him: roads, bridges, highways, transit, rail, airports, ports, wastewater, drinking water, and broadband. And then at the end of the meeting, he turns to Speaker Pelosi and says, "Well, Nancy, what do you think?" And she says, "Well, what do you mean, Mr. President?" And he says, "How much money?" And she said, "Well, I think $1.5 trillion." And Trump goes, "No, no, no." And we're all like, "Oh, gosh." And then he says, "1.8. Nope. No, he said, "Wait a minute, $2 trillion. And we're like, "Okay, that's big. And then then we agreed to come back in 3 weeks and figure out how to pay for it. And in the meantime, his right-wing Freedom Caucus Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, who was in Los Angeles that day, who immediately tweeted against the agreement, came back and killed it. And that was the end of infrastructure under Donald Trump. I passed a huge bill when he was in the White House, sent it to the Senate, nothing happened. I passed a huge bill at the beginning of the Biden administration, sent it to the Senate, and went through a real legislative process, hours and hours and hours, hundreds of amendments, days on the floor, day and a half in committee. And the Senate is so dysfunctional, they couldn't do it. And the president finally had to cut a deal with 10 Republicans and two conservative Democrats to get a bill. It contains some of the elements of my bill. I think I drove their number up way big, but it still wasn't as much as I had proposed. And Biden got it done. And then we vote on it in the House. And 13 Republicans have the guts to vote what's good for their constituents, what's good for America. And they get vilified for it. They get threatened with losing their committee assignments. They get death threats. It's not the place that I served in for 36 years. It's sad.
What are some of the changes you've seen in that time in terms of the working relationships across the aisle?
Well, as I said, half of my career has been in the minority. I mean, the first big bill I did was with Mark O. Hatfield, a fabulous Republican senator from the state of Oregon, a real gentleman. And we did the largest expansion of wild and scenic rivers in the history of the lower 48 in Oregon. And then the next term, I partnered with Republican Senator Bob Packwood. And we put a permanent ban on the export of logs off of federal lands, which only had been a year-to-year ban and always in question. So back when I got here, you know, we could work across the aisle in for the nation and for the state and for our constituents. And that's becoming a very, very rare thing here today, and it's not good for the country.
Do you feel like, what do you feel like contributed to things getting so polarized between the parties?
Oh, boy, that's a long and complicated question. I put a lot of the blame, to tell the truth, on President Obama. When he came in, he said, we won't look back. So they didn't prosecute any one of the crooks from Wall Street. You know, millions of people lost their homes. The people on Wall Street walked away with the money. And nobody got prosecuted for what happened. And then his head of the Justice Department went back to his Wall Street office when he left the Obama administration. That really made people angry. And then when he did the Recovery Act, the bill we passed out of the House had a lot of infrastructure in it, had real jobs and rebuilding the country. And then this jerk who worked for him, Larry Summers, intervened, and Obama wanted to get Republican votes. So he said, no, we're going to do tax cuts instead of actually building things and putting people to work. And the tax cuts didn't put people back to work, and people were angry about that. They were angry about the bailout of Wall Street. And then they also get deceived by the misrepresentation of so-called Obamacare, which now enjoys great popularity.
Congressman Peter DeFazio with us on Inside Douglas County. Do you have concerns about the midterm elections as a Democrat?
I think the Republicans are measuring the curtains a little early. Actually, I'm surprised. They control, I think, two-thirds of the state legislatures, and or nearly 60% or two-thirds of the states completely. They can do whatever they want. The Supreme Court has said gerrymandering is great so far as we're concerned. And yet, at this point, the analysis I've read is Democrats and Republicans are about even on redistricting. And when the Republicans have, gotten more seats, they're under litigation. So I think they're just a little, Biden's at a low point right now. When the infrastructure kicks in next year, we're going to be creating hundreds of thousands of good wage jobs across the country. And if we get the next bill, Build Back Better, done, we continue the tax breaks for families with kids, help people get affordable child care. I just think they're a little ahead of themselves.
More with Congressman Peter DeFazio when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 12:46. Back in 2 minutes on Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, News Radio 1240 KQEN. And Congressman Peter DeFazio on with us now after announcing his retirement at the end of his term last week. Congressman, was
hey, Kyle, can we go back to that last question, which I didn't really get to finish?
Sure, go for it.
It really started with Clinton and free trade. I voted against every free trade agreement. Now, after COVID, we've learned that we can't be dependent upon the rest of the world for things we need. That all continued with Bush. Then came Obama, and I talked about what he did to precipitate the problems. And then he basically enabled Trump. He tried to do more free trade, did those other things. And then Trump has been so unbelievably ugly and destructive to this nation. They tried a coup. I mean, you just spend some time looking at it. That was an attempted coup planned on the 6th of January, and I was here to overturn Americans' representative democracy. So this is a long story, a long time coming, and I'm hoping the country heals in the next couple of years.
So was there a particular time when you looked around? Was there one thing that finalized your decision to retire after this term?
I don't know. I mean, there were just a lot of factors. Like I said before, you know, we used to work across the aisle. Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader who is worshiping at the altar of Trump, opposes anything and all things Democrat. Non-controversial bills supported by Republicans, which normally would go without a vote, they're requiring a vote. They're just trying to obstruct the process. It's very frustrating.
What are your priorities for the remainder of your time in office?
Oh, I'm going to work with the administration on implementing the $550 billion of new spending on infrastructure. Mitch Landrieu, former mayor of New Orleans, is going to be the head of that, working with Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation. I've got to do a Coast Guard reauthorization. I'm going to do another water resources reauthorization. I got the big one last time, which is to pay permanently for dredging and maintaining our harbors by unlocking the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. That took me 25 years. We wouldn't have any coastal ports if I hadn't fought tooth and nail year in, year out to keep them dredged and keep the jetties repaired. But now we've got the money. Not going to have to fight tooth and nail anymore because I unlocked the $10 billion that have been collected in taxes sitting there from the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. So, I'll be doing probably designating how some of that money will be spent. I've got $30 million pending in the appropriations bill for moving up the jetty repair in Coos Bay with the hope that they get a container port, which will be an incredible economic boon for that community. I saved the railroad with federal money, working with then-Governor Kulongoski, took it away from a hedge fund who wanted to abandon it and rip up the rails. Just imagine if Coos Bay becomes the major, easiest, shortest entry container port in the western United States when people are waiting a month to get into Long Beach or 3 weeks to get into Tacoma, Seattle.
You mentioned Coos Bay, and that made me think about Jordan Cove. Your office put out a release a few hours ago. What are your thoughts about where that is at after the withdrawal from Pembina?
I'm pleased. First off, they were going to take private land through eminent domain because of a bad Supreme Court decision. Beyond that, I mean, we do not need to becoming more dependent upon fossil fuels, exporting fossil fuels out of the United States to other countries. We've got to move away from fossil fuels. Coos Bay will be much better served as a container port, moving freight by water and rail, which they'll be able to do. They will be the only direct connected rail port in the western United States. It's much more complicated down in L.A. Long Beach. And you know, that is the most efficient way to move freight, the least carbon intense, and that will be good for the environment and great for the people of Coos Bay. It's much more appropriate than the 40 or so permanent jobs, maybe 30, that they would have gotten out of Jordan Cove, who would just be maintaining this gigantic fossil fuel facility. There'll be hundreds of jobs relating to the container port.
One of the fascinating things, I think, for me watching government bodies work is the tremendous length of time sometimes that things go back and forth. Jordan Cove is an example, going back years and years, different phases, different owners. When you have been in office for such a long time, talk about the importance of sort of that knowledge base of dealing with an issue for years and years versus being newer in office.
Well, as I said, I identified along with the then Republican chair, Bud Schuster, who was chair of the Public Works Committee. Later, his son, Bill Schuster, chaired the committee just before me. And I started with him in 1996 on, getting access to the harbor maintenance trust fund monies to maintain our ports. That took 25 years. Things don't happen easily around here. I introduced my first bill to take away antitrust from the health insurance industry over 20 years ago. I got it done last year. It's not a place where things happen quickly. But a younger and vigorous person can represent the district well. They sure as heck can have one of the most important things I do, which doesn't get headlines, is helping individuals with problems with the federal government. We call it constituent services. Chris Conroy down there in Roseburg does it. Kathy Erickson over on the coast and whole staff up in Eugene. I have always prided myself on that. We have helped literally tens of thousands of Oregonians get benefits they've earned, they deserve, that the VA was blocking or Social Security was blocking or other federal agencies were dragging their selves on. And a new member can put that in place right away. And then you start working on what are your legislative priorities. That's going to take longer.
When you announced last week, were people aware that this was going to be coming, or did it surprise a lot of folks? Did you kind of keep it real quiet?
There were some friends who knew about it. Certainly my wife. She said, "I thought you'd never retire." And she was pretty happy because she's been urging it for a while because she thinks this has really hurt my health. I mean, it's a minimum 22-hour round-trip commute to get home. And, I've spent an awful lot of years on airplanes or delayed getting home. And I want to be home a lot more. And other friends knew, but no. And I told my senior staff, but I had not told the entire staff until after. For some, it was a shock. There were a lot of tears. And I have gotten an unbelievable outpouring from friends and supporters and people I kind of forgot about or reminding me of things I did. So I'm feeling very, very, very good about it.
About 40 seconds left. What are your plans for after office?
Well, I created Devil's Staircase Wilderness. That took quite a while. I've hiked it once, hardest hike I've ever done. I got my back fixed, and I'm hoping to hike it again this summer. I'd like to do Cycle Oregon again. Maybe I'll teach. I've got a book in my head. I don't know. There's a big world out there, and I will no longer be scheduled every 15 minutes or half hour every day, virtually 24/7. So I'm going to enjoy life a little more.
Congressman Peter DeFazio, thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks, Kyle.
1257 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.